The following talk was given by Mary Sullivan at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 14, 2022. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
But I was listening to an interview on NPR on Friday with Carrie Miller, who was interviewing a Pakistani Muslim, a writer, an immigrant. And I loved listening to this guy. He was, I don't know, there was something about him. He was very well-spoken, very intelligent, ebullient. And the subject of his, well, let me just say that as a Pakistani Muslim immigrant, he had been subject to a lot of online abuse. People who had heard him blog, had read his writings, I thought he might have been on Twitter, and he had really been subject to a lot of abuse from the audience. Go back to where you came from. I don't remember exactly, but you can imagine the sorts of things people might have said to them in their said to him in their delusion, and their preferences and their ideas, which we all have and we're all subject to. So this book was about his daughter. At the age of two, his daughter was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Now, stage 4 means that it has metastasized. The tumor has metastasized. She's 2 years old. Where can it go? She's so tiny, but it had metastasized. So the prognosis was not good. So this man, who'd been subject to this online abuse, got offers from people, his abusers and others, of a liver. She needed a liver. Now, I didn't know this. I did not know that the liver regenerates. So you don't have to have a cadaver donation. You don't have to have a liver from a dead donor. A living donor can give part of his or her or their liver, and then their liver regenerates. And then the liver grows in the recipient, the donor recipient. I did not know that until this morning because I had David look it up for me because I didn't know you could do that. I was just fascinated by this. So the very people, maybe not the same ones, who had subjected him to their prejudices, their beliefs, their narrow ideas, their perverted views, offered their livers for his daughter. And this just transformed him. It was a transformative experience. She is now, I think he said 15, and she is cancer free. And I really liked hearing him. So he's written about this in his book, the whole thing about the what happened, what led up to it, and what has since happened. Now I listen to these stories and momentarily I'm heartened momentarily. I don't have any enduring faith in humanity, in human nature. And I'm talking about from a very conceptual, very biased point of view, where my mind can be pulled in one direction or another if I hear something that is not, and this is not right view, no matter what anybody says. Being a liberal Democrat is not right view, and I can be pulled one way or the other depending upon what I hear and how people react and what's going on in Ukraine, and I notice my mind being pulled from one extreme to the other. So it was, while it may have been a transformative experience for him, and while I very much enjoyed listening to Carrie Miller interview him about his book, and I may or may not go out and read his book, I was not transformed. So the title of so that gets me to the title of this talk, which is Our Heart's Desire. Steve talks about this, our heart's desire. What is our true desire? And as Steve points out, it is to wake up. It is to wake up. It is to be who we truly are. As Norm says, our true nature is to be awake, aware. That's our true nature. That's our heart's desire. So I want to read first from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, because I like what, Suzuki has to say. So, he says, this is Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. This is in the chapter entitled Right Practice. And this reading is called Nothing Special. He says, I do not feel like speaking after Zazen. I feel the practice of Zazen is enough. But if I must say something, I think I would like to talk about how wonderful it is to practice Zazen. Our purpose is just to keep this practice forever. He says, and he means this. And this is, I think Steve is going to talk about this in One Bright Pearl, or he's already talked about it, or it's come up, or I just read it or something. This practice started from beginningless time and will continue into endless future. This is practice right here, right now, starting from beginningless time and continuing into an endless future. Strictly speaking, for a human being, there is no other practice than this practice. There is no other way of life than this way of life. And then he says, Zen practice is the direct expression of our true nature. He says, this really practice, this Zazen, Zen practice is the only way, really, that we can express our true nature. What is our true nature? Buddha, that's our true nature. He says, and he means this, of course, whatever we do is the expression of our true nature. But without this practice, it is difficult to realize. It's like, sure, I can listen to what this man has to say. My heart can go out to him. I can maybe donate to some cause to support the Ukrainian people. I can do whatever, but that's not an expression of my true nature, because I'm still being pulled. I can still feel my mind being pulled this way and that, by circumstances, by ideas, by beliefs, by prejudices, by opinions. He says, whatever we do is the expression of our true nature, but without this practice, it is difficult to realize. He says, it is our human nature to be active and the nature of every existence, so we can't not act. As Steve has pointed out in Meditation Now or Never, we cannot not act. That is what we act. Even when we're not acting, we're acting. And he says, it is our human nature to be active in the nature of every existence. As long as we are alive, we are always doing something. But as long as you think, I am doing this, or I have to do this, or I must attain something special, you are actually not doing anything. When you give up, when you actually, when you no longer want something, or when you do not try to do anything special, then you do something. So I hope I'm not misspeaking here. So when we practice this, when we do this with, as Steve pointed out so well in the class on the six perfections, with an unsupported thought, this is think not thinking. This is acting out of an unsupported thought, of not wanting to get anything. He says, when you give up, when you no longer want something, or when you do not try to do it in anything special, then you do something. When there is no gaining idea in what you do, then you do something. Now, I know we've all heard this many times, but I feel like it bears repetition. I feel it helps me to say it. I feel what I feel that this is expressing very well what is very difficult to express. He says, when there is no gaining idea in what you do, then you do something. In Zazen, what you are doing is not for the sake of anything. You may feel as if you are doing something special, but actually, it is only the expression of our true nature. So this is our true nature. Our true nature is to act out of that wisdom of not trying to get anything. This is the perfection of wisdom. This is how we express the perfection of wisdom in our practice. We act without a gaining idea. We practice without a gaining idea. He says, you may feel as if you are doing something special, but actually it is only the expression of your true nature. It is the activity which appeases your inmost desire. You know, it's hard. I find it hard to appease my inmost desire because I mistake other things for my inmost desire, as I think many people do. We do chase after things. We do want things. We desire things. We attach to things. And we think that we are satisfying our inmost desire. But I think that we hear when we sit down and we practice and we just sit and we just sit for the sake of sitting and we just sit for the and living life as all beings for the sake of all beings, then we are appeasing our inmost desire. And I think that can be seen. I think we can experience that. As Dogen says in the Fukan Zazengi, which I quote, because I know it by heart because I've recited it so many times. He says, oh gosh, I just forgot what I wanted to say. He says, oh, the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. He says, it is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. And then he says, traps and snares can never reach it. Once its heart is grasped, you are like the dragon when he gains the water, like the tiger when she enters the mountain. For you must know in Zazen that just there in Zazen, truth is manifesting itself. Truth is manifesting itself. We're not adding to it. We're not subtracting to it. We are truth. We sit and we are manifesting truth. Truth is manifesting itself. And from the first, distraction, dullness and distraction are struck aside. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm showing off. I've recited it so many times. But the truth of it hits me. Sometimes it doesn't hit me all the time when I recite it on Friday nights, but sometimes the truth of it really hits me. And I feel grateful for the opportunity to recite it. So Dogen says, it is the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, meaning there are no barriers to it. The gateless gate. The barrierless there are no barriers to repose and bliss. I don't know that I've experienced bliss, but it doesn't matter. That peace, I think you all know what I mean. What that is. Words really can't describe it, although Dogen does a very good job, as does Suzuki. Anyway. It is the activity which appeases your inmost desire. There is true satisfaction there. And this is without an attachment to anything. And that in itself is true peace. This freedom from attachment, true peace. Anyway, as long as you think you are practicing Zazen for the sake of something, that is not true practice. But don't give up. He says, if you continue this simple practice every day, you will obtain a wonderful power. Isn't that interesting that he says that after what he just said? You will obtain a wonderful power. Is he setting us up? No. Let me just say that. Although it could sound like that. He says, before you attain it, it is something wonderful. But after you attain it, it is nothing special. It is just you yourself. Nothing special. And then he goes on to say, it is a kind of mystery that for people who have no experience of enlightenment, enlightenment is something wonderful. So we have these ideas about enlightenment, which we have ideas about everything. But if they attain it, it is nothing. But yet, he says, it is not nothing. For a mother with children, having children is nothing special. And yet it is. That is Zazen. So if you continue this practice, more and more, you will acquire something. Nothing special, but nevertheless something. You may say universal nature or Buddha nature or enlightenment. You may call it by many names. But for the person who has it, it is nothing and it is something. So he's trying to bring us to the middle of the two extremes. It is not nothing and it is not something. He's trying to bring us to that middle of the two extremes of something and nothing. In his way, he does it in a very interesting way. He says, when we express our true nature, we are human beings. When we do not know what we are. He says some interesting things. He says, when Zen is not Zen, nothing exists. That's a little puzzling. When Zen is not Zen, nothing exists. I'm not exactly sure what he means by that. But then he says, intellectually, my talk makes no sense. But if you have experienced true practice, you will understand what I mean. And then he explains what he means by when something exists. And he doesn't mean it persists. He says, if something exists, it has its own true nature, Buddha nature. And then he talks about the distinction between having Buddha nature and being Buddha nature, which is our true nature. That's been talked about before. But then he says, so to be a human being is to be a Buddha. Buddha nature is just another name for human nature, our true human nature. Thus, even though you do not do anything, you are actually doing something. You are expressing yourself. You are expressing your true nature. Your eyes will express, your voice will express, your demeanor will express. The most important thing is to express your true nature in the simplest, most adequate way, and to appreciate it in the smallest existence. So this opens up the whole world. This opens up an appreciation of what our life truly is, of who we truly are, this practice that we do. and that we may sometimes take for granted. I know sometimes I do. And I'm so glad Dharma Field has opened up and we're here and we're practicing together. He says, the most important thing is to forget all gaining ideas, all dualistic ideas. In other words, just practice Zazen in a certain posture. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? It sounds so simple, and it is. But as Steve has pointed out very many times over and over, we have these enormously powerful, complex minds. And we get caught up in them. They tangle us up the way our feet can get tangled up in weeds or whatever may tangle us up. Untied shoelaces, I don't know, tied together shoelaces. Anyway, we can really tie ourselves up with our marvelous minds, these minds that can play virtuoso piano, create fabulous music and art. So we're not denying it. Do not think about anything. So Dogen says in the Fukanza Zengi, think not thinking. How do you think not thinking? Non-thinking. So don't think about that too much. He means that, literally. He means that. Just let go of conceptual thought. Just let it go. He says, just remain on your cushion without expecting anything. Then you will resume your own true nature. That is to say, your own true nature resumes itself. So this is how we express our true nature. That's not to say we can't do it in other ways, but as soon as we attach to that, then we're no longer expressing our true nature. As so I'm teaching, co-teaching with Steve Matushak, Rise of the Mahayana, the Zen roots, and we're going to get to the perfection of wisdom literature, distinctly Mahayana literature. Although, as I'm going to talk about in my next class on Monday, there are non-Mahayana sutras that are truly Mahayana that have been included in the Mahayana canon. So again, there are no hard and fast distinctions here. Nothing to hold on to as solid, substantial, and some sort of distinction that you can rely on. Can't rely on distinctions. Hang on, I'm taking a drink of water. 10:26. So maybe I'll stop here and ask if there are any questions or comments. I'll go on, but does anybody have any comments or questions? Disagreements? Yes.
I just really like that sentence you wrote. Says it is about when Zen is not Zen.
It is nothing. Yeah.
This is just a really suggestive passage because you can parse it a couple different ways and it still is saying something.
How do you mean?
So when Zen is not Zen, when we're not engaging in practice, then that something that exists that he was talking about doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And yet, when Zen is not Zen, when we let go of the
yes, then it manifests its true nature. It is something. One has to be careful with those terms, though. Yes, thank you. Yes. It's an intriguing statement. And honestly, I'm not sure I fully understand it, but it's very intriguing. So I want to raise another point, possibly at my peril. Suzuki's big on no dualism, by the way. So again, in the section on right practice entitled No Dualism. So this is, I really like what he says. He says, when we say our practice should be without gaining ideas, without any expectations, even of enlightenment. He says, this does not mean, however, just to sit without any purpose. This practice, free from gaining ideas, is based on the Prajnaparamita Sutra. So the Prajnaparamita Sutra, expressed simply, the perfection of wisdom is A is not A. Therefore, it is A, which really might be what he means. Zen is not, when we practice so that Zen is not Zen, it is nothing. So there you have, I guess, an expression of A is not A. But when we practice Zen, not as something, but as just true practice, then it is A. I don't know. He says, this practice free from gaining ideas is based on the Prajnaparamita Sutra. However, he says, if you are not careful, the sutra itself will give you a gaining idea. It says, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. But if you attach to that statement, you are liable to be involved in dualistic ideas. Here is you, form, and here is emptiness, which you are trying to realize through your form. So really, this is an idea of emptiness, like somehow it's separate from form, separate from what's going on. He says, so form is emptiness and emptiness is form, is still dualistic. But fortunately, our teaching goes on to say, form is form and emptiness is emptiness. That's Dogen again. Here, there is no dualism. When you find it difficult to stop your mind while you are sitting, and when you are still trying to stop your mind, this is the stage of form is emptiness and emptiness is form. But while you are practicing in this dualistic way, more and more you will have, this is so interesting, I don't want to read this too fast, but while you are practicing in this dualistic way, notice he does not reject that. He does not reject that. While you are practicing in this dualistic way, more and more you will have oneness with your goal. And when your practice becomes effortless, you can stop your mind. When your practice becomes effortless, what does he mean by that? When your practice becomes effortless. I don't know about you, but I have to make an effort to practice. He says, this is the stage of form is form and emptiness is emptiness. So then he clarifies. He says, to stop your mind does not mean to stop the activities of mind. It means your mind pervades your whole body. Your mind pervades your whole body. This is awareness. This is the awareness Norm talks about when he says, just be your true nature. Be awakeness and awareness itself. Your mind pervades your whole body. Your mind follows your breathing. With your full mind, you form the mudra in your hands. So, this is the mudra, known as the cosmic mudra. This is how we hold our hands in Zazen. He says, with your whole mind, you sit with painful legs without being disturbed by them. This is to sit without any gaining idea. At first, you feel some restriction in your posture. But when you are not disturbed by the restriction, you have found the meaning of emptiness is emptiness and form is form. So to find your own way under some restriction doesn't necessarily mean painful legs. Could mean, for example, falling asleep during meditation. Hang on. So to find your own way under some restriction is the way of practice. This is how we practice with some restriction, with just letting that go, without being, so when he says not to be disturbed by it, he means just letting it go. He's not saying pretend it doesn't exist. That's not what he's saying. So for years I struggled, I've told this before, with drowsiness and meditation. I mean, I sat down and I would promptly fall asleep, promptly. And then I'd have to drag myself awake and practice some more, just be present, and then I'd fall asleep. For years, I struggled with drowsiness. And then I stopped being drowsy. I don't know why, but I stopped being drowsy for the most part in meditation. I have no idea why. I don't even try to figure it out. But I do notice that when I'm the Doan and I'm supposed to ring the bell at 7:35 at night, like on a Friday night, I'll see the clock roll over to 7:34 and then I'll focus on the clock so I don't miss the turn to 7:35 and I'll start to fall asleep at that point. And then I'll think, 7:35, I can't fall asleep. So I have yet to fall asleep right before it turns over to 7:35. So it still manifests in some ways. He says, when you sit, you should just sit without being disturbed by your painful legs or sleepiness. That is Zazen. And then he says, but at first it is very difficult to accept things as they are. You will be annoyed by the feeling you have in your practice. And I think that's very important to notice that annoyance, and not to ignore it. I want to read this from Meditation Now or Never. Steve talks about this. He says, in chapter 11, Constancy, what page is it? Doesn't say, 83. He says, and this is about practicing on a routine basis. He says about constancy. People new to meditation often misunderstand constancy. They think it's about not faltering. So they think it's about maybe not being annoyed when your legs bother you or you're sleepy, not being annoyed by it. He says, they think it's about not faltering, not losing your way, not losing your focus. But constancy, he says, is precisely about faltering over and over and coming back over and over, letting go over and over. With this understanding, we let ourselves be human. We allow ourselves to be annoyed by our practice. We allow ourselves to err and to learn and avoid getting discouraged about our meditation practice. So it's not that we never veer from the past, So it's not that we never veer from the path, but that we waste no time in returning to it. No time for discussion, no time for excuses. Back to here and now. Now, this does sound like very strict practice. And I have to say, when I read Suzuki, sometimes I feel like, geez, he's a taskmaster. This is very strict practice. But he is a taskmaster. And he means what he says. And it's not that he's saying we have to he's judging. It's one of the three legs of the stool of meditation that Steve talks about in here, not judging your own practice, nor judging the practice of others, nor judging others. It's one of the three principles that we employ when we meditate. So So Suzuki says, when you can do everything, whether it is good or bad, without disturbance, without being annoyed by the feeling, that is actually what we mean by form is form and emptiness is emptiness. Now he's not, when he talks about effortless practice, he's not saying we shouldn't make an effort. It's like when he says, don't move. And then he says, but you can move. If you're in pain, you can move, but don't move. It's a little contradictory. It seems contradictory. So he says, it is necessary for you to make some effort to continue our practice. He says, for the beginner, practice without effort is not true practice. For the beginner, the practice needs great effort. And then he says, you must stretch out your arms and legs as wide as they will go. Form is form. You must be true to your own way until at last you actually come to the point where you see it is necessary to forget all about yourself, just to let it go, not to judge. This is to forget all about yourself. This is to allow your body and mind and the bodies and minds of others to drop away. Until you come to this point, it is completely mistaken to think that whatever you do is zazen, is zen, or that it does not matter whether you practice or not. But if you make your best effort just to continue your practice with your whole mind and body, without gaining ideas, then whatever you do will be true practice. Just to continue should be your purpose. When you do something, just do it. That should be your purpose. Form is form, and you are you, and true emptiness will be realized in your practice. So, this is my segue into the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. A is not A, therefore it is A. this is in the Diamond Sutra. A bodhisattva is not a bodhisattva. Therefore, he's a bodhisattva. Therefore, she's a bodhisattva. Therefore, they are a bodhisattva. In the Marrow of Zen, he talks about the best horse and the worst horse. He says, he talks about this story in the Samyuktagama Sutra. It says that there are four kinds of horses, excellent ones, good ones, poor ones, and bad ones. The best horse will run slow and fast, right and left, at the driver's will, before it sees the shadow of the whip. The second best will run as well as the first one does, just before the whip reaches its skin. The third one will run when it feels pain on its body. The fourth will run after the pain penetrates to the marrow of its bones. He says, you can imagine how difficult it is for the fourth one to learn how to run. And then he says, when we hear this story, almost all of us want to be the best horse. Of course, if it is impossible to be the best one, we want to be the second best. This is, I think, the usual understanding of this story and of Zen. You may think that when you sit in Zazen, you will find out whether you are one of the best or one of the worst ones. Here, however, there is a misunderstanding of Zen. If you think the aim of Zen practice is to train you to become one of the best horses, you will have a big problem. This is not the right understanding. If you practice Zen in the right way, he says, it does not matter whether you are the best horse or the worst one. When you consider the mercy of Buddha, how do you think Buddha will feel about the four kinds of horses? He will have more sympathy for the worst one than the best one. He says, and this is in regard to what Steve says about faltering, about losing our way. He says, when you are determined to practice Zazen with the great mind of Buddha, you will find the worst horse is the most valuable one. In your very imperfections, you will find the basis for your firm way-seeking mind. He says, those who find great difficulties in practicing Zen will find more meaning in it. So I think that sometimes the best horse may be the worst horse, and the worst horse can be the best one. So I remember when I was having so much problem staying awake during Zazen, and I came across this, and I thought, boy, I am the worst horse. I mean, we may all know that feeling. We all have our own issues with practicing. So this is, A is not A. The worst horse, A is not A. The worst horse is not the best horse. Therefore, it is A. Therefore, it is the best horse. It is the horse that learns from the pain, from the annoyance, from the faltering. This is the best horse. And again, take this lightly. I'm just giving this, trying to give voice to what this perfection of wisdom means in my own way. He says, when we reflect on what we are doing in our everyday life, we are always ashamed of ourselves. And then he quotes Dogen. He says, Dogen Zenji said, Shoshaku Jushaku. Shaku generally means mistake or wrong. Shoshaku Jushaku means to succeed wrong with wrong, or one continuous mistake. This is A is not A. According to Dogen, one continuous mistake can also be Zen. A Zen master's life could be said to be so many years of Shoshaku Jushaku. This means so many years of one single-minded effort. A is not A, therefore it is A. We say, a good father is not a good father. Do you understand? One who thinks he is a good father is not a good father. One who thinks he is a good husband is not a good husband. One who thinks he is one of the worst husbands may be a good one. If he is always trying to be a good husband with a single-minded effort, if you find it impossible to sit because of some pain or some difficulty, then you should sit anyway, using a thick cushion or chair. So he does not deny that. I sit in a chair. Even though you are the worst horse, he says, you will get to the marrow of Zen. And then he says something very interesting. He says, suppose your children are suffering from a hopeless disease. You do not know what to do. You cannot lie in bed. I'm sure we've all had that experience where something, some terrible thing is weighing so heavily on us that we cannot even lie peacefully in bed. I actually have had that experience a lot recently. He says, normally the most comfortable place for you would be a warm, comfortable bed. But because of your mental agony, you cannot rest. You may walk up and down, in and out, but this does not help. Actually, the best way to relieve your mental suffering is to sit in Zazen, even in such a confused state of mind and bad posture. If you have no experience of sitting in this kind of difficult situation, you are not a Zen student. No other activity will appease your suffering. No other activity will appease your suffering. In other restless positions, you have no power to accept your difficulties. But in the Zazen posture, which you have acquired by long, hard practice, your body and mind have great power to accept things as they are, whether they are agreeable or disagreeable. When you feel disagreeable, it is better for you to sit. There is no other way to accept your problem and work on it. Whether you are the best horse or the worst, or whether your posture is good or bad, is out of the question. Everyone can practice Zazen and in this way work on his problems and accept them. And then he says, when you are sitting in the middle of your own problem, which is more real to you? When you are truly sitting, which is more real to you? Your problem or you yourself? The awareness that you are here right now is the ultimate fact. So he's saying that you yourself are more real to you than your problem is. This is the point you will realize by Zazen practice. In continuous practice under a succession of agreeable and disagreeable situations, you will realize the marrow of Zen and acquire its true strength. And I'm going to stop here. I've said enough. Any questions, comments, anything on the way? Darn, I've shut people up again. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.